Do you need a break?
You read my mind.
Come with me.
Hello there, and welcome to another episode of The Break. I'm your host, Father Roderick. I'm a priest and I'm a geek, and I love to talk about all the things that I'm passionate about. This week, of course, we're going to talk about Holy Week and Easter, but also about movies, TV shows, books, technology, and so much more. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. This episode is brought to you thanks to my patrons. If you want to support my work, if you would like to give something back and enable me to continue to do this work, take a look at patreon.com/FatherRoderick.
I do not like movies.
They're predictable. Like, the guy gets the girl and that kid sees dead people and Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Not liking movies is like not liking puppies.
They're fine. I just get bored and never make it to the end.
You know, you need a movie education. You need a moviecation. I'm going to give it to you.
As always, at the beginning of this show, I talk about movies and TV shows, and I've not watched that much news. I've seen a few more episodes of The Three Body Problem, which is an amazing science fiction show based on the famous trilogy of books by a Chinese author whose name I forgot, but it's a wonderful adaptation. I read an article that actually the show is not doing as well as Netflix hoped it would. This is a big budget production. It is helmed by the same people that brought us Game of Thrones, and it definitely has that HBO old-fashioned quality about it. It is an incredible story. It's a complicated series, and maybe science fiction is less popular than fantasy, so it struggles to find an immediate audience, but I wouldn't be surprised if this series gets a lot of word-of-mouth type of publicity. Apple has been struggling with science fiction series as well when they first launched a number of these series. It sometimes took a few months for them to catch on. And the downside of our current streaming war that we're in is that a lot of these platforms tend to only look at the immediate results in the first week. And if a show doesn't do very well in the first 5 days, then a lot of those shows get canceled. And I don't know about you, but my viewing behavior is not that I jump on every new show. Sometimes I see the thumbnail on my screen and then I just add it to my to watch list. But I might be in the middle of some other series, or I may have some other movies that I want to check out. Plus, I'm subscribed to a lot of these channels, so there's always something going on. But if I see something that catches my eye and it gets good reviews and it gets good word of mouth, then over time, I will certainly watch it. And the downside is that sometimes these series get canceled even before I get the chance to up the numbers for that show. And I've heard from people that, for instance, have produced a documentary that was then put on Netflix or Prime Video or whatever other channel, that they encourage their followers, their fans, to go watch it in the first few days, because apparently that is extremely important for any renewal or any sequel to be greenlit. So I really hope that a lot of people will watch The Three Body Problem. It does really well in the Netherlands. It's been number one since the day they launched it. So maybe it plays differently in Europe than it does in the United States. But if you haven't watched it yet and you have Netflix and you like science fiction, especially more kind of like intellectually challenging science fiction, it is a really good series. And of course, the books were already incredibly popular. The first book got the Hugo Award. So we're not talking about some random science fiction show. I've really been hooked on this series. I'm still debating what it means, but it's also because I'm not far enough yet. So I don't know where the story takes me, but I am very, very engaged. Plus, it talks about a lot of stuff that are very much in the news, about artificial intelligence, about VR and AR and all that stuff. So even though the book was written, 4 years ago? It's still extremely topical. So I've been watching that. In addition to that, just to kind of calm myself down, I've watched a few more episodes of Star Trek. Star Trek is my happy place, and I still have 3 more seasons of Deep Space Nine to finish. So such a joy to discover that series. Like 20 years too late. How old is that series? It is very, very old. I also did some research of what was going on behind the scenes while they were filming season 5. And there was this weird plot line where I just knew that it had to have something to do with the actual situation of the actors. So at one point, Keiko, who is in the series husband of O'Brien, is pregnant with her second child. And then at one point, Kira is through some kind of, what is it? Was it a transporter thing or whatever? They come up with a technical reason why she becomes the carrier of the baby of Keiko. And I'm like, that's such a weird plot. I mean, who comes up with that? And it didn't feel like something that was necessary for the overall story that they were trying to tell. So Deep Space Nine was one of the first series that actually told a story over the course of the entire series, just like Babylon 5, of which it was not really a copy, but it was too similar to be a coincidence. So why this pregnancy? Why Kira is single in the series? And it turns out the actress was actually pregnant. And I think the father is actually Dr. Bashir, the actor, not the doctor. But they had a relationship, and apparently she's pregnant. So this explains a number of things. If you know it, you see it. Because they play with this relationship between O'Brien and Dr. Bashir. And Dr. Bashir is very constantly like looking at what's happening with that pregnancy. And there's something, again, a bit strange in there. But if you realize that in real life it is his child that the actress is carrying, then it kind of all makes sense. They just wrote it into the season. Very interesting. They do this oftentimes. Either they write it in, or what they now can do nowadays, they just use CGI and body doubles. And I think this happened with Black Widow in the Marvel series. At one point, the actress was pregnant, and at the same time, she had to film one of the Avengers movies, and so they just completely digitally fixed it, as if it's something to fix, as if it's a problem. But she, you know, there's so many people involved in a big budget production like that, that you just can't say, well, we'll put everything on hold for a couple of months. And so they just may do, and they use CGI body doubles to solve it. And you, if you don't know it, you'd never know. So those are the two things that I've been watching last week. And there are a number of other movies, especially, and one particular TV show that I'm really looking forward to, and I would like to discuss them. So let's start with the first one. I had no idea that this movie was in production, and it is a sequel prequel to one of my favorite horror science fiction series, movie science fiction series, and that is the Alien or Aliens series. And the first two Alien movies, of course, were fantastic, incredible masterpieces. The first one is a little bit slow. The second one is really, I think, one of the best horror science fiction movies I've ever seen. The third one was a bit strange, but still okay. And then you got these subsequent sequels. They were not that good. And when I heard there was going to be another movie, I was wondering, is this going to be a reboot? How does this tie in to the overall mythology of the Aliens series? And it turns out that this is a movie that chronologically inserts itself in between the first movie, Alien, and the second movie, Aliens. And it will also, in the story, explain some of the stuff that happens between these two movies, and it ties them together. I'm very curious to see how they did that. And it's also something that I think is very smart. It's a bit like what they did with Star Wars, with Rogue One. Rogue One led into the beginning of A New Hope. Like the last scene you see in Rogue One is the beginning of the movie A New Hope. And so it feels very compatible. It feels very similar to that old movie that we all know and love, and they are doing the same here with this movie, but it's going to be in between these two. I really like that, and of course it's not going to feature the same actors, but it's still in the same universe and the same problem. And of course, because Alien is mostly about the aliens, and they are spreading everywhere in the galaxy, it's a little bit easier to do than if, for instance, Lucasfilm would want to make a movie in between, I don't know, Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. You couldn't do that because it relies very much on the dynamics of the Skywalker family and their friends. So it wouldn't be the same without those actors in it. But for Aliens, I think you can do it. So let's take a look at that trailer for Alien Romulus. It's called Alien Romulus. And here is the... Oh, let's hope the audio plays over the headphones. Let me make sure that is the case. All right, here we go. From Fede Alvarez, director of Don't Breathe, and Evil Dead. Ridley Scott is producing.
Run.
Alien Romulus, oh my goodness, it definitely feels very much. So this is going to be in theaters August 16, the day after the Assumption of the Virgin Mary, in case you you wondered. So very, very interesting take on the Aliens franchise. What I liked is how it uses sound clips from, I think, from the original Alien movie. That's all the screaming and take it away, take it off me. But it's just echoes, and you see scenes that remind you of that first movie. And then a lot of the cinematography, the lighting, the alien, of course, is very, very similar to what we see in Alien and Aliens. So there's good visual continuity there. Of course, this is filmed digitally, so it looks amazing. It's probably super high resolution. That's going to be the only difference. If you're watching all the movies in chronological sequence, you probably will notice the incredible amount of grain in the first two movies, especially the second movie. They struggled so much with this because most of the movie, of course, takes place in the dark, and they were using a particular, to save money, they used smaller negatives. And that means, of course, smaller lenses, less light. And so the second movie is very, very grainy. Now, I don't mind. You get used to it. And if the story is good, you don't notice it after a while. But I think if you are going to watch this movie and then watch its sequel, Aliens, you're definitely going to notice how much cinematography has evolved and how good the quality is nowadays. So that's the first movie that I'm looking forward to. The second movie is totally different, but also part of a franchise that I really enjoy. Especially, and this is a reboot of a franchise, and it's the Planet of the Apes series. And the original Planet of the Apes, of course, is a classic movie with an incredible twist at the end. The subsequent movies were really cheesy, and at one point, I have the whole series in a DVD box, and the third or the fourth movie, they're unwatchable. They're so terrible, and of course, they didn't have CGI or anything, so it's basically people wearing masks, and it's so obvious. But then came the reboot, And Andy Serkis played the main character of that series, and they used motion capture and a lot of the technology that they had developed for The Lord of the Rings and a motion capture of Gollum. And Andy Serkis, with all his experience, brought that to the new Planet of the Apes reboot, and it was insanely good. I really enjoyed those movies. But I never thought that it would continue to make sequel to onto sequel at one point. You know, what else is there to tell? It's the same premise. And yet, we're going to get another Planet of the Apes movie. And this one is called Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. So there's a lot of the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. It's very tricky to turn that into a legible logo, but they somehow managed. So what is this story going to be about? Well, let's check out the trailer because it gives away most of what the story is going to be.
Are you familiar with the concept of evolution?
These are apes talking about evolution. And of course, this is in the future.
In their time, humans were capable of many great things.
Noah!
They could fly like eagles fly. They could speak across oceans. But now, it is our time. And it is my kingdom.
A big gorilla king.
We'll learn. Apes will learn. I will learn. And I will conquer.
May the 10th.
Legend says ape and human live side by side. Impossible as that may seem.
Why do they hunt her?
She's smarter than most.
The elders did not tell us everything about this world.
Bend for your king.
Apes hunt humans. Wrong.
No one can stop the rain.
Together, you will die.
No, together, strong.
Planet of the Apes. Well, it looks good, I have to say. It looks really good. And it is pretty obvious why they are telling this particular story. Because it is all about working together, living together. And you can tell that, again, this is a story that reflects our current time where there's a lot of division, a lot of fear between people that consider themselves to be superior to others. There's a lot of hatred, discrimination, and this movie clearly makes a point to tell us that ultimately we're all on the same planet where we're meant to work together. But there are also other people that think that by ruling over others, by oppressing others, that is what they are destined to do. So I think it's an important story to tell. It's a little bit on the nose. So it's not very subtle. If you watch this trailer, you know exactly what the message of the movie is going to be. But nevertheless, it's a classic story. And in a certain way, we need fairy tales like this that keep reminding us of what life is truly about and how we are supposed to live together. And so the values that a story like this promotes, I'm totally in agreement with, and I think it's very important to keep telling ourselves this, even if it's with silly stories about talking apes. We should never forget that ultimately we're all loved by the same God, who does not say, well, you are meant to be a slave and you're inferior and you are superior and you should rule just because you have a lot of money and you were lucky to be born in this part of the world. For God, we're all equal. We're just as equally loved. And we are called to emulate that and to reflect that in a way that we treat our brothers and sisters, even though they may look different and they may speak different from us. Another thing that this movie seems to evoke is a very nasty part of discrimination, where certain groups that currently in society have power and privilege look down upon people from other cultures and considering that culture to be inferior, not even realizing that those cultures have been around for much, much longer than their own culture. Think of the incredible variety of culture and history on the African continent and South American continent as well. There were cities and societies that were far superior to anything that we have in our current day and age, and yet there is in our Western world, a lot of these people are discriminated against and looked down upon. These are primitive or whatever. And so we do exactly what this big ape is doing in the movie, where it's like, well, you know what? There may have been a time that these people were thriving, but now I'm the boss and I don't care for their culture. And then there is this other ape played by Andy Serkis. It was like, no, I mean, nobody told us that these humans had such an incredible culture and used to do amazing things. And maybe it's our fault as well that culture is gone now. And I'm thinking of the harm that a lot of the conquerors and explorers did to the African continent and the South American world, where oftentimes they destroyed the country. And this is true for North America as well. When the Europeans came over to America, so many Native Americans died because of all the diseases that the Europeans brought to North America. And so a lot of the culture was not even noticed by these settlers. And if you look at society now, and this is true for North America, this is true for Australia, down under, same thing. A lot of that culture is very European. It looks European. The architecture is very European. The lifestyle, the language, of course. All the native languages were suppressed, and English became the standard language. And that has destroyed so much, and it shows so much disrespect for the actual value of the people that live there. This movie, I think, is about things like that. And if we're not careful, if we don't tell ourselves these stories, we will continue to make the same mistakes that the generations before us have made as well. And maybe even in our own way of looking at people around us, we have those same immediate prejudices and the same judgment. We need to keep telling good stories that remind us of the fact that what we should do is not rule over one another, but be interested in one another and learn from each other, and never ever regard any human as less than you. And maybe even to a certain extent, also the way we treat animals. And it's very weird that we love to eat bacon, and we love to eat our hamburgers, and yet, pigs are super intelligent. They're more intelligent than dogs. We wouldn't think of eating dog meat, and yet, bacon is in the top three of most liked food. Now, I'm not saying that we should all be vegans and vegetarians, but it is something to sometimes remind ourselves of. We are very random in what we value and what we don't value. And just because a pig doesn't look as cute as a dog, doesn't mean that the life of a pig is of less value than that of a pet or a dog. Anyway, just a few thoughts. Hey, there is one more movie, actually one more television series that I would like to talk about. And this is a TV series that I'm very hyped about because it is based on one of my favorite video games or video game series, which is called the Fallout series. And I've always thought that those, especially from Fallout 3, the first two Fallout video games were kind of top-down games, still very good stories. But the third one became first-person perspective, and it was very cinematic. The whole first part feels much more like an adventure game. I've always felt that this lends itself so well to a TV adaptation, and that's exactly what they did with Fallout. So it's coming soon to Prime Video. Let's take a look at the trailer.
Hello there. I'm here to show you a wonderful place. A veritable Camelot, the nuclear age. Not made by God Almighty, but the working man.
You can be a hero by purchasing a residence in a Vault-Tec vault today. Because if the worst should happen tomorrow, the world is going to need you to build a better day after.
There's been a nuclear disaster.
The mission of the vaults should be important to everyone. Come up to the surface one day and restart civilization. Can you tell me what's happened in the last 200 years?
Holy shit. You're an actual vault dweller.
I am.
I thought all you dipshits were dead.
From Westworld director Jonathan Nolan.
What you're doing is insane.
I don't accept the world.
It isn't like the vault out there. It's big.
And we're invited to the apocalypse.
I've had a rough week. Practically every person I've met up here has tried to kill me.
I'm simply going to harvest your organs.
You need to go home. You come from a world of rules, of laws. You should not be alone.
Why did you join the Brotherhood?
To hurt the people who hurt me.
People are going to come after you.
Ain't much stage cleanup here, Vault-D. Well, now that is a very small drop in a very, very large bucket of drugs.
It does remind me of Westworld.
Look out at this wasteland. Looks like chaos. But there's always somebody behind the wheel.
The end of the world is not what it used to be.
What is happening here?
Everyone wants to save the world. They disagree on how.
There you are, you little killer.
I love, love, love that they used the vintage song. This is really one of my favorite songs for a long time when I was playing the video game. This is from the Ink, what's the name of that band again? The Ink Brothers or something like that? No, the Ink Spots. And every Fallout game would start with a vintage song like that, and you would see a very cinematic trailer played over it, and it's just amazing. The contrast works really well. It's very iconic. This series looks amazing. I think this is already, even though I haven't seen a single episode, but this is for me a guaranteed hit. It's very reminiscent of Westworld to a certain extent. So Westworld, of course, the story is that in the future, you are able to, if you pay a lot of money, to enter into a Western world where everybody is a robot, but a very intelligent artificial intelligence. So every robot has artificial intelligence and a certain agency as well. And you can do whatever you want, which, of course, turns regular people into extremely cruel animals. But then some of these robots become self-aware and they rebel, and then they become the hunters, and the humans are, the clients are becoming the hunted. I always regret that they never finished the series. That was one of the television shows that didn't get enough traction, so it was canceled. And very suddenly, this was, a Max series, and they just pulled the plug. Very frustrating. With Fallout, I'm less concerned, even if it ends after one season. The games themselves also told individual stories. So the Fallout 3 is a self-enclosed story. Then you have Fallout Las Vegas and some more sequels. Fallout 4. The dog, by the way, that you see in the trailer is, I think, inspired by the dog in Fallout 4, which I think is a very smart element to add to the game, because you feel very attached to the dog. So you're not just fighting for yourself. You also want to protect your dog. But this is the story of a society that has been living underground, as the trailer makes clear, for 200 years. And once the radiation it has subsided enough, some of these vault people go venture outside. And we follow this young lady as she is entering into this post-apocalyptic world and discovers that the radiation has created a lot of monsters, and the few people that have not been able to reach a vault in time have somehow survived, but it has, of course, had a tremendous impact on the way they treat each other, and it's a very much a Wild West world, very dangerous, full of monsters and criminals, and there's this creepy guy without a nose who seems to be also one of the villains in the story. He reminds me a lot of the main villain in Westworld. So super stoked, and I'm sure that once I see this television series, I'm going to play that game nonstop. Even the Fallout 3 really holds up very well, which is quite a feat, because it's super old. I think it's like more than 10 years, maybe even 15 years old. But it was a milestone game at the time, and still holds up pretty well today. All right, that was the list of movies and TV shows that I'm looking forward to. Let's step into the world of The Peculiar Bunch. Yes, please. Here we go.
Catholics rock!
And of course, we need to visit The Peculiar Bunch, the place where you can ask anything you always wanted to know about Catholics, but you were afraid to ask. But because it's Holy Week.
Catholics can be a peculiar bunch. No meat on Friday.
No meat? What do they eat? Light bulbs?
And this upcoming Friday is one of the compulsory days of abstinence, which means you don't eat bacon. You go vegan.
Man, you guys got more crazy rules than Blockbuster Video.
Unfortunately, with the time of Lent and Holy Week, Christians suffer the same type of stereotype characterization as the Muslims experience when they have their Ramadan, which is currently going on. And the subsequent festivities. A lot of the coverage about these times of fasting and penance focus on the food, because apparently that's something that everybody can relate to, but not you know, what is it for? What's the rest? The Ramadan is so much more than not eating between sunrise and sunset. There is a very important communal aspect to it. You're supposed to help one another. After sunset, you come together and you eat. So it's very important for the bonds of family and friendship, sharing food and sharing with the poor. All those values are extremely important during Ramadan. And obviously, because they are to a certain extent derived from Christianity and the customs that Christianity had around the time of Lent. And so it's not by accident that these times usually take place around the same time during the year and have similar values. So for Christians, the time of Lent is a little bit more than 40 days, which is inspired by the 40 years that the people of God have traveled under the direction of Moses through the desert to go to get to the promised land, as well as the 40 days that Jesus spent in the desert before he started his public ministry. So the values that Christians emphasize during Lent are very much inspired by Jesus himself, who went to the desert to pray and to fast. And it's after that he returns and starts healing people and helping people. So the three values that are most prominent during Lent are fasting, and that is not just food, but you can also abstain from other things that you would normally spend money on. And but it's also very much a time where you're encouraged to pray more or to reserve more to time for God and to deepen your relationship with God and to deepen and strengthen the relationship with your neighbor, especially the poor, especially those in need. And so your relationship with God, if you strengthen that, it will also, comes with the package, will strengthen your bond with your brothers and sisters. You cannot pray to God if you cannot love God if you don't love your neighbor. And so those two go together. Fasting is not just to show how heroic you are or to lose weight, but fasting is also to save money so you can share some of your wealth with people that are less fortunate than you. And that act of charity will ultimately also strengthen your bond with God, because whatever you do for the smallest among you, you've done for me, says Jesus. So it's all related. Now, this time of Lent ends or culminates, you could say, in this particular week that we have, that we're currently in, which is Holy Week. Starts on Palm Sunday, which commemorates, on the one hand, Jesus' entry in Jerusalem as the Messiah, who was prophesied to come back to Jerusalem. And so, according to tradition, Jesus entered through the big gate that was that was prophesied as the gate that the Messiah would enter Jerusalem through. That gate is actually still visible in Jerusalem near the complex of the temple, the remains of the temple. So that's one thing. And then the second element of Palm Sunday is the first reading of the Passion, according to one of the Gospels. That differs every year. And there is a second time that we will read the Passion, and that is during the so-called Triduum Paschale, so the 3 days of Easter. And that Triduum starts on Thursday, on Holy Thursday, and it starts in the morning with in the diocese with the Chrism Mass, where the bishop will bless the holy oils that are used for the various sacraments. It's also the Mass during which a lot of the priests will come together and renew their promises to their bishop and pledge their allegiance. Maybe that's a similar terminology. And then the evening of Holy Thursday is the celebration and of the institution of the Eucharist. So this goes back to, of course, the Last Supper that Jesus celebrated with his apostles, where he washed the feet of the apostles and told them to do the same to one another. So basically, you have to serve one another and humble yourself like Jesus is doing. And that's also the evening that he took the bread during the meal, broke it, and gave it to them, saying, this is my body, which is given up for you. And then at the end of the meal, so this is not a continuous rite. So Jesus waits until the end of the meal to hand down the cup with wine. And there are some, there's some debate among scholars what kind of meal that was. One of the theories that you often hear is that that was a not just a cup, but it was a very special cup that was for the prophet. So it had a special status, and Jesus takes that and says, you know, I'm the one sent by God. And then Jesus says, take this cup and drink of it, because this is my blood. Thereby already prefiguring what would happen after that Last Supper, when he is praying in the garden and Judas comes towards him with the Roman soldiers and betrays him with a kiss. That leads to his condemnation. So they bring him before Pontius Pilate, and then Pontius Pilate sends him to Herod, who is kind of the local leader there. And then he's sent back to Pilate, and Pilate is like, hey, I've talked with this Jesus, and I don't see what's wrong, you know, why you guys want to kill him. But okay, here's what we do. I usually for this feast, because this all happens before the celebration of the traditional Jewish Easter, which commemorated the Exodus from Egypt. Normally for these festivities, I'm a Roman, but, you know, of course I want to get some goodwill among the people that live here. I release someone who is in prison. So I've got this criminal here, Barabbas. He's killed someone as a robber, clearly a criminal. And then you've got Jesus. Who do you want me to release? And of course, he hopes that they will say, well, just release Jesus, because, you know, he didn't kill anyone. But instead, they call for the crucifixion of Jesus. So all these things are commemorated on Good Friday. And so Good Friday in Catholic liturgy has two moments. There is the official commemoration of the suffering, or it's the veneration of the cross, during which we read the Passion according to the apostle, the evangelist John. So the Gospel according to John has a slightly different, well, actually quite different take on the Passion story. So we read that one in its entirety. There's no communion, there's no Mass, because it's the day that Jesus died. So it's a day of abstinence and fasting out of, you could say, solidarity, connection with the tragic events that Jesus has to undergo. But it's also a moment where the cross is offered to be venerated by the faithful, so they can either touch it or kiss it, or and it's just a ritual that shows that we want to connect our own suffering and the suffering in our world with the suffering of Jesus. Now, earlier that day, around 3 o'clock, usually traditionally, there's also the way of the cross that is prayed in many churches. This is an ancient ritual where there are these stations of the cross that commemorate certain moments that we know from the various gospels that narrate the story of the Passion, and then some of the elements are not biblical, but they're brought in to just complete the story to a certain extent. They're based on oral traditions, and then nothing, and then it's the, you know, when at the end of the Good Friday celebrations, we enter the silence of Holy Saturday. And that is a day of preparation, which is very similar, you could say, to the way in which the Jewish faithful prepare for Passover. It's not compulsory, but a lot of people just clean everything and they prepare for the Easter celebrations, just like the Jewish people will clean the house and they will toss out all the old bread and no crumb should be left, so that at the beginning of Passover, you start anew. And there is very much in the Catholic tradition the same kind of movement. Saturday, there are no celebrations in church. It's all just the silence of the tomb, you could say. But a lot of people are preparing for the festivities that start in when the sun has set, with the biggest, most complex liturgical celebration, which is the Paschal Vigil, which actually is not that old. It's been reintroduced quite recently, I think in the 60s, maybe a bit earlier. I'm not sure. I wasn't born yet. And so this is a very long celebration where there's lots of biblical readings that all connect to basically the fulfillment of those stories in the story of Jesus. And that is the celebration, which has a lot of symbols. Main symbolism is the church is in completely dark. There is a fire that we make outside of the church. That fire is blessed, and the candle, the big Easter candle, is lit with that fire and brought into the dark church. And then all the people have candles that they light with the light of the Easter candle. It's a beautiful celebration. And then there is a song that is sung that just exalts the resurrection of Christ. There is, after all the readings, there's the renewal of the baptismal vow. So when you were baptized, most people were baptized when they were still children. And so every year during the Easter Vigil, you renew what your parents said, because you couldn't speak at that time. So it's this yearly renewal of your faith. And then the rest is just a celebration of the Eucharist. And then Easter morning is the continuation of that. So Easter morning, same thing. It's the morning of the resurrection. So we read the gospel of the first appearance of Jesus to the women that come to the tomb and discover that the tomb is empty. And then for 8 days, we call this the octave, Latin word for eight. For 8 days, we celebrate Easter as if it's Easter Day itself. So don't say that Catholics are somber people. We know how to party. So we have an octave for Christmas and we have an octave for Easter. There you have it. That's in a nutshell what Holy Week is about. And with that bit of information, I leave you. And I hope you have a good Holy Week for those of you that will go to church. And even if, you know, liturgy is not your thing, or you're not really a churchgoer right now, there are other ways also to connect to this story. There are amazing movies that are made. Some people love to listen to Bach's Matthäus, the Passion according to St. Matthew or St. John. It's beautiful music. Or if you like more like the vibe of the 70s, you can listen to the Jesus Christ Superstar soundtrack. That's what I grew up with. There is a very cool television series that is much more recent about Jesus. So The Chosen. You can watch some of those episodes. And then, of course, on Easter, celebrate the life. Celebrate all the symbolism, the eggs and the bunnies and the chocolate and everything that makes you happy. Because Easter is, for Christians at least, the most important celebration of the year, because it connects us with the promise of Jesus that whoever believes in him will live forever. Well, that's a thing we should celebrate. Happy Easter, and we'll talk next week. God bless.